Welcome to It's All Journalism. My name is Michael O'Connell. Technology has seeped into every aspect of our lives. From our cell phones and laptops to our programmable toasters, technology has made life better. But has it made us better people, better journalists, better citizens of the planet? These are lofty thoughts, but it's good sometimes to ponder lofty thoughts. Alex Howard is the government 2.0 Washington correspondent for O'Reilly Media. His beat is the place where government, the internet, and society intersect to tackle the big problems facing society today. Welcome, Alex.
It's great to be here.
Let's talk about your beat at O'Reilly. How would you describe it?
Well, recently it's been focused more upon two specific areas, how technology and data are changing journalism, and how open data, as released by governments and scrapable out in the web, can be used to drive new startups. Now, over the past nearly 3 years, I've covered much more than that. I've talked about open government as specifically driven by changes in technology, written about collective intelligence and distributed intelligence, again, enabled by tech, what's happening in the mobile world, what's happening around technology policy here in Washington and beyond. That includes things like cybersecurity, privacy policy, includes how the models of computing itself are changing, so-called cloud computing. We've focused upon how different agencies are using these different tools, also focused upon how citizens are using these tools to hold government accountable, and trying to understand how this incredibly rapid pace of technological change is shifting the ways that we understand what government is doing, how government understands what is happening in the planet, and potentially how that intersection enables society and government itself to work better. There's some truly fascinating trends, I think, that are occurring really any place where someone has a connected smartphone in their hands now. And I've been trying to chronicle that as best I can now for the better part of, I said almost 3 years at O'Reilly, and then for years before that as well.
So did you have an aha moment at some point in your career where you woke up to the internet and saw some potential in it?
I'd say it came considerably before I would have called it a career. I logged on for the first time to a bulletin board service, back when we dialed in through modems in our computer room at my high school in Philadelphia.
Tell me you were playing a video game or a Hunt the Wumpus, or you were writing about Star Trek or something.
I think as a high school junior, I probably was looking for pornography. In all seriousness, I was interested in seeing that there was a place where people could log on to something electronic and were exchanging information over it. And once I saw that, I started to explore much more thoroughly. And I think really started to delve in much more when I got a Performa 636 Mac in the fall of 1994 freshman year and a 14.4 modem, and started really digging in. And at that point, I think TurboGopher was the way I was exploring a very textual internet. But not long after that, first web browser ended up on my desktop, and I was off and running. And instantly started to see much of the potential that I'd been dreaming about since I was a boy, reading science fiction from Asimov and the rest of those greats.
I was going to ask you, how has technology, changed the way you do reporting? But and certainly you can still answer that. But it seems like that you were sort of involved in the development of yourself as a journalist. So maybe that's something we can't take apart. That's part of who you are. What role does technology play in what you do?
Well, I think that there's new opportunities to collect information about the world using technology in person, and in the moment. Certainly, we have incredibly powerful computing devices on the table between us right now. Both of us have iPhones. I've recently upgraded to the iPhone 5 and immediately have been struck by how much better the camera is. The quality is better. I can now live stream things more effectively. I can take high definition video, and I've gone to congressional hearings and talked to the witnesses and recorded interviews with them right there in the spot and uploaded them right to YouTube and then put them into my stories. Mm-hmm. That there are incredibly powerful ways now to answer the most simple questions that I think people look to journalists to answer for them. You're there. I'm not. What are you seeing? Mm-hmm. What can you tell me that's happening there that matters? Why does it matter? What kind of context can you add on top of it? So that's straightforward. If we're working in a much more visual medium, a much more interactive medium now, where pictures and sound and video have become very much a part of the work, then I think having extremely powerful mobile devices changes that. The second part of it, I think you have to talk about the impact of social media in terms of finding sources, finding people on the ground where there's a given news event, finding experts around a given topic. You know, if you look at the over time, there's a lot of different effects that these networks have inside of companies, inside of huge institutions and business enterprises and government, certainly. Also, I think in the media fabric itself, the news obviously itself is moving much more quickly now, the famous, you know, 15-second news mm-hmm. cycle maybe. But you can certainly find what people are talking about and let it lead you to maybe where things are happening, and then find sources very quickly and contact them via Skype, verify that they're actually who they say they are, and corroborate things. The last part, and this is something I think I mentioned initially, writing about this, something I've been focused upon more, is the role of data in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at what your people do in reporting, it's really gathering evidence and data to understand the given story. If you look at what a columnist does, ideally he or she should be gathering evidence to examine a given viewpoint,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've had some great discussions recently about the difference between professional pundits and people who are more driven by data and evidence, specifically mm-hmm. catalyzed by Nate Silver at, you know, 538 at the New York Times. But there's a, I think, a really interesting emerging world right now where this combination of designers and developers and storytellers are working together in newsrooms and outside of newsrooms and startups to create ways of doing journalism, pushing the boundaries beyond what's simply possible through broadcast, television or radio, or a printed page. You know, extremely powerful interactives that let people mm-hmm. explore a story, databases that crawl through tens or hundreds of thousands of records to find patterns within them, to find fraud or corruption, to find the different ways that the world is changing as told by all that aggregate data. And that's a really exciting thing. It's a true challenge for the space, because people who have those kinds of skills are in high demand in other industries, from government
right.
to Wall Street to Silicon Valley. So the question is almost, you know, were they willing to go turn that on to be a developer in that context.
Do you see that article? I think it was in Time a few days ago about the Obama campaign and how they were using data. Briefly, what they did was, since 2004, they've pretty much combined all the information they had about the people who contributed to them, who had followed them and everything, and they were using that to make decisions about the way they were campaigning in mm-hmm. a very different way than what the Republicans are doing, but what anybody had really done before. What are your thoughts about something like that? Is this kind of what we were talking about?
I think that's part of it, certainly. I mean, one of the things that people who have been steeped in this area for a while have been saying this past year is that the capacity of journalists to really cover what the campaign's doing, specifically the Obama campaign here, I think, isn't where it needs to be. That mm-hmm. the capacity of the machine that they built, and I say machine as a metaphor, since it's a combination of many different technologies that were put to bear here,
mm-hmm.
It is unprecedented.
Right.
And you know, as you described it, I think accurately, it's pulling together the data that existed, and this is not a new thing necessarily to look at, say, voter registration data and demographics, with all the other sources online, and then combined it with behavioral science to try
right.
to nudge people to make different decisions. And I think it's probably a little bit too deterministic to say that technological advantage was the difference, or that the Romney campaign's technology, which I think, as you may have heard, had some real problems on Election Day, that
mm-hmm.
Something called Project Orca came apart, you know, that they were the difference. But a lot of people are rushing to that conclusion right now.
Right.
And it'll take some time. But look, there are a lot of tools that are available to startups to move very quickly in these spaces now. They can quickly spin up applications, do massive amounts of processing on Amazon, in their cloud. They can use various open source technologies to process so-called big data, something that's just beyond normal capacity,
right?
And move very quickly to understand how public sentiment is moving and which people to target in given areas that might move a given county. And I would expect that to be studied exhaustively. I'm hoping to talk with some of the people who worked on that in the campaign in the weeks to come and see more of that in years ahead.
You know, I agree with you. I think it's probably too early for us to say that that was the difference in the race, but it certainly, for people who sort of follow what's going on in data mining, you know, certainly you see it in other areas in marketing. You mentioned Amazon and Facebook, you know, being able to identify things that by the patterns of the people who are using it. Mm-hmm. What do you think journalists are doing well right now in terms of digital technology?
Oh, that's interesting. I think I alluded to one thing, that the news application developers, there's a emerging group of these folks. They gather together at tribes like IRE and NICAR, these conferences where they exchange tips, exchange code for how to build applications better, different techniques for building maps and apps and interactives, et cetera. And I think some of that work is really extraordinary. This actually story, going back to Orca, just as an example of how do we tell which firms worked on it? And someone that was out there said, well, look at FEC disbursements, right? This is Fed Election Committee, which they're required to report to. And then that's out there as data that can be sucked in, that can be analyzed. You can quickly see who the top people were on it and looked at it in a spreadsheet. And then someone from ProPublica piped up, and this is talking over social media where a lot of these conversations happen now, and said, look at this interactive I built. And you could explore all of the money that was spent in this election cycle in this extraordinary interactive where you literally could click through and then see the profiles of the companies, see how much was spent, see the different political action committees. I mean, this unprecedented outflow of money. And really, in a very clear, interesting, colorful way, see that. I think the story is much bigger than that, obviously. There have been, a steady drumbeat now for years for journalists to get social media. So some of the people are very good in that space in terms of engaging the public, getting feedback for stories, finding sources on the ground, resharing voices into the space that are putting out documentary evidence.
Sure.
Andy Carvin at NPR has become very famous for doing that in the context of the Arab Spring, sharing what the best that he can find in terms of pictures and video, and then other services help to verify it. But that's basically a raw feed of what's happening on the ground.
Right.
I think certainly traditional newsrooms are hobbled by a number of difficult factors, from their pensions to pretty rough content management systems. The question is whether those organizations will be able to successfully deal with that legacy and move on to more robust modern tools, or whether a new class of startups in the space will be able to replace them. I'm not sure if that's going to happen or not. That's the whole future of news discussion. But I do think that there's a lot for people to be proud of in various spaces. I think some of the work that's gone into making, say, the NPR app is really impressive. I can now time shift and listen to programs when and where I want to.
Right.
In the car, I'll just plug in my iPhone and stream to what I want, or download podcasts. That's a great capacity. The changes have been so swift that it's caught a lot of organizations, I think, unawares, even as the traditional, a lot of the revenue models that existed before have moved. So one of the things I'm really curious about now is to what extent the ad sales guys and gals in the front offices can get some of these new forms of content sponsored to provide new streams. And there, I think it's an open question.
Right.
I'm not sure if that side has been even close to fixed yet. It seems like a huge challenge.
Where are the fall downs? Where are things areas that people could be working a lot better with incorporating digital into what they're doing in their reporting and in their distribution?
Sure. Well, it's interesting. You know, people say, what should I do if I'm a young person and interested in studying this? And so the first thing is study something else, right? I think I have a degree in biology and sociology. I didn't, you know, was not a communications or journalism major. I think it's you're much better equipped if you have real substantive background and expertise in a given subject matter area. So science, law, medicine, trade policy, you know, something. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly that puts you in a much better place. You know, the reality on the ground right now has shifted to the point where many of the people who might have been the sources and experts that journalists would go to can now speak themselves. So they're going straight. I mean, this is the phenomenon. The source is going direct.
Right.
So you need to figure out, the journalists need to figure out how to do better at adding context and clarity, at being more focused upon analysis and not just simply, and you know, this is the terrible knock, being stenographers for the powerful, right?
Right.
You know, the phenomenon of journalists live tweeting politicians or tech executives' speeches if those speeches are otherwise available, right?
Right.
That's something which I've done at various times myself, but only if there's no other way to get the reporting out, right? Mm-hmm. Then you're providing a service by saying, well, this person said this thing about this thing. But even then, are you adding context in that atomized form of media in the way of a picture or a link or some other attribution to lead people to something more in the story? Just the naked quote may not be helpful, and I still see that. I think there's still a division between print and digital and news organizations. Mm-hmm. That's something that's just got to go. It's a relic to imagine that's possible anymore. And I understand that people will say, "Well, you've never worked in a newsroom," and I say, "Yeah, I that's true. I haven't." given that we are in the place we are now, at the end of 2012, being digital first. And getting out a print version that offers analysis and more value to the reader who may have seen that news on his or her phone, 6, 10, 12, 14 hours ahead before
right.
That's just critical. I still see an interesting old guard attitude towards social media and the web too. You know, it's comments about bloggers and about
are
the
we
Twitter
still
sphere.
Having that talk?
It's still there. It shows up when people in broadcast and print come into digital spaces and act the same way. You know, here's what I think about things, broadcast, walk away. And not seeing that it's a two-way conversation now, period. Mm-hmm. That's the way it is. And you can choose not to participate, but people will be talking about you
right.
in these spaces. And that it's up to you whether you choose to talk back, but you can't
Yeah, you can't close
down.
The door.
Right.
Yeah.
And to see that the public is a resource for your reporting in that context, not a bunch of unruly, unwashed comment creators. And I understand, having spent time in newspaper comment sections and other places, that they're rough places to be. But I've put a stake in the ground with respect to being an active participant in every single blog or forum that I am in charge of. And that, for me, those are my Facebook page, my Google Plus page, my Twitter feed, the blogs I contribute to. I want to read comments, and where it makes sense, reply to them. And I think the research shows that when you do that, the comments become more civil because people realize that someone's listening and someone actually is mm-hmm. focused on what they're doing. And I'm not sure that that kind of thinking is really there yet in a lot of news organizations. You know, the internet was viewed as recently as a decade ago as this kind of other place.
Mm-hmm.
And the lines between offline and online are really breaking down, mm-hmm. right? What I say online totally comes back to me in quote-unquote real life. People lose jobs over these things.
Right.
We're embroiled in a huge scandal about what the CIA
right.
director and his biographer said to each other in a Dropbox and email, right?
Right.
And for journalists to separate those things out, and I still see that out there. I think that's a mistake, particularly because in my own personal experience, having a really engaged readership, having these networks of people who are connected to you across different platforms, who are reading you in these different places, interacting with you in these different places, makes the work better. I have gotten just uncountable number of comments that have helped me extend where I'm focusing upon next, that have helped me understand a story better, that have helped lead me to other sources, that have fixed issues with a story that are factual, or issues with copy, or issues with broken technology in the posts. Mm-hmm. And there's real return there too. When you have a really you've engaged networks around a given person, a given media entity, they amplify the work because they care about it. And the media that people share now is very much something that they do in the context of building digital identity.
Right.
So if you can create something that's trusted and that's viewed as valuable, it accrues capital to them, social capital
sure.
to them by sharing it. And I think that seeing that connection is something that we've come a long way on in the past 5 years. I don't think that every news organization is there yet, and I would advocate for more of that.
What are your early thoughts on the role technology played in the election, but then also the role the technology played in the covering of the election?
There's going to be some books in this one.
At least.
Because I mentioned the 15-second news cycle. The pace by which news breaks has forced the campaigns to try to be more nimble in how they respond to things. And certainly going online is the way that that's happening. They are actually doing more than maybe I thought they would have in terms of directly responding not just to each other, but also to reporters, challenging stories before they're written because they're listening to the reporters' tweets and looking at their Facebook updates. They are engaging in spin during the debates, not afterwards, mm-hmm. but actually shifting during. The fact-check movement, right, this year became a very
big deal.
We've seen PolitiFact for a long time now, but it's. I think it became pretty clear that when, at least for me, where I was sitting, if the campaigns are live streaming the events, if the events are on TV, if they themselves are spinning in real time, they're fact-checking each other, the role of the media shouldn't be reporting that because it's all out there for people to
sure.
see. It should be figuring out what's true or not. That's where the resources are best applied, and I think that the public rewarded that. That's in my gut. The public really wants to know whether what that guy or woman, right, many more female politicians than ever have been in history mm-hmm. in Congress as a result of this election.
Is it New Hampshire is it New Hampshire or Vermont that has the whole all-female legislative?
I don't know. I'll have to go look. I was thinking
congressional.
The picture this morning of House Minority Leader Pelosi and all the legislators behind her. I think the Senate is now 20% women, which
wow.
is historical high watermark.
Yeah, they've only got 30% more to actually have no representation.
Right.
In the
I think it's 53% overall in the country. Right.
There we go.
We'll get there. The important thing in this though is that in this huge sea of information that's out there, this gigantic wave of people posting on Facebook and Twitter and all these different videos going up and the memes this year, right? Their campaign memes became a very big part of the coverage, you know, even to the point of journalists deciding to amplify certain memes mm-hmm. or not, something I participated in. But I'm really thoughtful about it. I wrote a piece about this after I went in Al Jazeera to be a commentator about what's happening online. The debates became reduced to that instead of the policies that were being discussed in them, which is not a service to the public. I think there's a clear need for the journalism of people everywhere to be focusing on finding out what's true in all of that and delivering that to the readers, listeners, and watchers. A huge amount of noise. You have to be able to find signal. And I think one of the things that I'm seeing Certainly based upon some of the analysis of the social data here is that there's a fair amount of homophily that's developed, right? That you've got the two sides, and there are certainly many, many different shades between the quote-unquote Democrat and Democratic Party and Republican Party, the, you know, red and blue. There's a lot of purple in here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that the networks themselves were listening to each other, not talking across the aisle as much as they need to. That the partisanship has not necessarily lent itself to these networks being used for the kind of Democratic, small d, discourse that a republic needs to mm-hmm. have really good discussion of public policy. And I'm hopeful that there'll be a host of new civic startups and architectures that will help to bridge some of that partisanship, because the old media model where you had someone kind of pulling together the massive middle together is gone. People now can so personalize the media that they consume from print to radio and most of all to the internet, that the role of media organizations to, I think, thread the needle towards what the evidence on the ground between different policy choices is will become even more important, because many of the people formerly known as the audience may be stuck in ideological echo chambers that are not exposing them to not just the best arguments of the other side, but what the best science on the ground is actually saying. Now, that evolves over time. That's the nature of that kind of inquiry. But I think it's going to be very important for people in these spaces to be willing to call BS on something that's just not true.
It's real easy to sometimes get wrapped up in the bells and the whistles, the shiny bits of technology in general, and say, oh, these are all these really great things. But one of the things that we always need to be mindful of as journalists are the values that we bring to the reporting. How do we maintain those? How do we continue those on in the coming decades?
I don't know if the technology fundamentally changes the ethics behind the space. I do think it gives new opportunities for people to be clear about where they're coming from. I think there are clear needs for disclosure. That's something that I think Kara Swisher, who writes for All Things D, is one of the best at, if you look at her disclosure page.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I think a lot about at O'Reilly. You know, we have a venture capital arm, and so if I write a post about one of the companies that's been funded, I need to get that disclosure out there. You know, I just wrote a piece about going to the Brookings Institute yesterday to participate in a forum about what the first 100 days of the next administration should look like, and I made sure to put in that post that I was paid to be a moderator at a forum they held earlier this year about this exact subject. You know the best that we can do is to be as forthright as possible about anything that might add to people not trusting the work.
Mm-hmm.
Trust is currency in these environments. Your integrity is something that you build up over the course of years. You can not buy it, I think. You can't buy the audience's belief that you are
honest, truthful.
Right.
You can earn that.
You can earn it. You have to earn it, and it's easy to lose it. So, I try as hard as I can to be factual, to be fair, to be accurate. If I make a mistake, to make a correction, to be fully open about the fact that I will make those mistakes,
mm-hmm.
and that I really hope people will tell me about them. I'm not sure what more we can do than that, than adhere to the standards that the organizations that employ us, maintain. I do see some some real challenges coming down the road to that space. I was reading about the success of print publications in India, and there's advertorials in them, basically glowing profiles of celebrities and athletes. And the problem is they're written by newsroom staff. Now, having glowing profiles as advertorial is one thing. Having them be written by the newsroom staff is maybe another.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how does that person deal with the fact that maybe they're writing a what amounts to next generation PR when they're also expected to be on the other side of the wall? This stuff gets very fuzzy very quickly. It's why disclosures are really important. So, you know, was I paid to write this or not? Was did the newspaper receive money to sponsor this or not?
Mm-hmm.
It becomes very complicated once you add in social media to that too.
Right.
And there is not as yet a bunch of metadata standards by which you can clearly see this is a sponsored thing. You just don't know. So that's why it's kind of contingent upon the person in question to kind of proactively get that out there. And that's something that's really easy to slip up on, especially if you don't have a lot of space or a lot of time. And boy, that's the life of most people working these days.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing. You talked before about people building a digital identity, and as more and more journalists, you know, enter the digital space and they're creating these identities for themselves. I think you learn pretty quickly that if you're not forthcoming about who you are and what you're doing, that people are quick to, you know, come out and correct things.
I'd say this too about that. Talk about digitalists creating the digital identity. Well, that's the part that you want out there.
Right.
A lot of your readers have already created one for you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially if you work for a prominent network or publication, they'll be talking about your work. They'll be quoting you or citing you or linking to you. They're active around it already.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't say this is who I am, because who you are and what you do and how you're thought of and the value that your work is given and the reputation that you have is being created by all the people around it, you know. And you can add your voice to it.
Sure.
I mean, the decision I made a number of years ago is to proactively put myself out in a lot of these networks, because I made the call, and I think it was an accurate one, that people would be searching for it on Google and all these networks, and it really behooved me to make myself findable mm-hmm. and the work findable. That's how people are consuming. So why wouldn't you want to have your stuff be findable by them, particularly if that enables you to have a much more prominent role in the discussion around it.
And people can come to you if they have a question or if they have a concern. They know that you're... Have you been verified?
You know, I haven't. That's because nobody is, you know, trying to masquerade as Digifile. I chose a made-up word, you know, from over 5 years ago to be my kind of online moniker. And it's worked out okay, because I was an obscure tech journalist, and that was a way to distinguish myself as opposed to, you know, A.B. Howard. There are definitely other Alexander Howards out there, but I haven't had a problem with someone, you know, actively impersonating me. I'll know I've really made it when there's a fake Alex Howard.
There we go. Well, as soon as this has been posted online, someone will create a fake Alex Howard or Digifile.
I have a ways to go for that, I think.
Okay. Well, we've been talking, I always say that. I've been talking to Alex Howard of O'Reilly Media. Thank you very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing face of the media. You can find out more about this podcast at itsalljournalism.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at @alljournalism. This podcast was designed to be a two-way discussion about the future of journalism. We'd like to hear what you have to say. It's All Journalism welcomes suggestions from listeners about possible topics or interview subjects for upcoming podcasts. Email your suggestions to editor@itsalljournalism.com.